This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here live from the MVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. The COVID-19 pandemic has been the reason for many entertainment cancellations. From Comic-Cons, concerts, and festivals, they have all been canceled. Joining me to give insight on the live entertainment landscape is president of Beyond Oz Productions, Gabriel Maciccone. Thanks for joining me, Gabriel.
Thank you.
So tell me, how'd you get started in the music festivals business?
Our journey started kind of uniquely. I came out of school for business and marketing. Our background, and when I say our, I mean my family. Our family business is venture capitalism. We take on projects, build them, and either continue with the business or sell. So this happened to be one of the business opportunities at the table. And me coming out of school, I always had a passion and love for not only music and electronic music, but festival and events and club life. So going to clubs and festivals throughout my life, I knew there was some things that I didn't fully enjoy or like about them, and bringing that unique outlook to the business, I thought I could change those things and hopefully dominate the space in our own region. So that's really how we started.
Wow, that's pretty cool, because you're going from something like business contracts to, boom, events. That's like night and day, right?
It's funny enough that the business side of our family and our lessons here actually helped navigate some of the contractual issues or things that, you know, maybe promoters didn't think they'd have to deal with when doing these events and festivals. So it uniquely helped me.
Could you give an example? Because I'm kind of curious. Like, I spoke to Riot Fest, one of the co-founders, Mike, and he went through some of the growing pains, and I just want to kind of compare between the two. You're taking it from like a business aspect, and he was doing it from just like a ground floor grassroots effort.
I think some of the things, you know, through even the talent purchasing or buying aspect of the business, those contracts that maybe, you know, don't get closely looked at, get signed, and potentially some harmful things to the promoter that could be in there. I think, you know, the business background that we have really helped us navigate and negate some of those potential issues that could arise, especially being an infant, an independently owned and promoted festival. You know, there's a lot of risk in the beginning stages of your career that, you know, other entities might try and leverage over you. So having that savvy paper background definitely helped us navigate through those growing pains for sure.
So what was your first event like?
Our first event was probably a weekend I don't want to remember, but definitely one that I keep in the books as lessons learned. Unfortunately, was the worst weather recorded in Kitchener, Ontario history on that weekend. It rained, I believe it even snowed for a little bit. Hail came down, we had a tornado during build. It was just insane. But that being said, you know, the numbers were still decent. We did promote and put on this festival in about 3 months, so we didn't even have anywhere close to a full calendar year for promotion on typically what you need for these large-scale events. So for jumping in first year with very little background in the industry, I think it was a great weekend, but definitely something that we keep in the playbook as what not to do.
Yeah, I was thinking 3 months, that's a flash in the pan right there. You guys worked and hustled real hard.
Yeah, we actually only had tickets on sale for, I believe, just over 2 months. So it was an intense month of booking talent, making us look real, finding a venue, and really just putting what we thought was our all-star team together to really get this off the ground and get our feet wet and really dive into the industry here.
So how did you pick the talent? Did you just kind of look at people and say, ooh, you're available, I'll take you?
No, actually, growing up, I was always an electronic music fan. So I thought I had that, you know, advantage over some other talent buyers or promoters in our region. So I followed the music, the culture, and the industry itself very, very closely. You know, from as young as 12 and 14, I snuck into my first club to go listen to a DJ that, you know, in my era, none of my friends really understood. you know, like, you're going to go see a musical act that doesn't sing words? It was kind of a little confusing for people I grew up with. So, but that being said, for me, being attracted to that music at such a young age, it really gave me an insight as to who's big, who's up and coming, and just really able to follow trends in the electronic music scene.
Now, one of the things I think is really unique when it comes to EDM festivals is that it's a lot of lights. It's a lot of, like you said, you don't have a lot of people singing, but you have a lot of things going on in the background. Is that something you brought into your first event?
One of the major issues that I found while going to events and clubs and different festivals while I was growing up was really that, you know, everything was called a festival, and there wasn't any true product in our region, anyways, that really used what that word was defined as. And what I mean by that was, to me, they were just multi-day concerts. So that experience that you get at a festival, you know, the camping, the other activities outside of what's on the stage, is really what I knew we had to bring to the product to stand out from all of these big, big companies throwing on these events, such as Live Nation right in our backyard. So, yeah, we tried to bring a lot of that outside experience into the event right from day one.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I'm curious, did you have food? Did you go daring and do food?
We did. We've primarily been a turnkey operation from day one. So we were lucky enough that our venue partners were in the catering business for a very, very long time, have catered other festivals, not only in the region, but outside of the region. So we really looked at this as, okay, on the F&B side, this can be a true partnership. And how do we maximize the execution of what the food and beverage side of the business can be?
So we talked about the first time you ever did an event, but how long have you been doing them for?
We've been in the business for roughly 6 years. We've been in entertainment, not personally, but my father, which is the chairman of our company, he's been entertainment on the film production side. He probably started about 20 years ago and exited about 10 years ago. So there was a little gap there, but he had some experience in that side, and I had the experience as a fan and attendee from the live entertainment side of things.
Now, with COVID-19 and all this pandemic stuff, has it affected your business at all?
Oh, greatly, greatly. COVID-19, as much as it's affected, you know, mankind, it's most definitely affected businesses. And I'd say live entertainment probably the most of all. You know, as promoters, our jobs are, or was, to bring as many people together to create this amazing energy and atmosphere and truly just an experience, whether it be your one vacation you take throughout the year or just your weekend getaway. But that innate was what we are built to do in our DNA. So, you know, that obviously goes against everything that combats COVID. So it's definitely a unique time. And, you know, an unforeseen circumstance like this definitely, most definitely, hinders the business.
Yeah, one of the unfortunate parts about this whole pandemic stuff is that it changes the landscape. Some of these vendors and sponsors may not even exist anymore in a year or two, simply because, you know, they can't make money if there's no business to go to. Do you expect your vendors to change, or do you think you're going to be still with them in the upcoming years?
Live entertainment as an industry, we've kind of really band together, or attempted to band together, to help one another to get through this. It seems as though we've kind of been forgotten on a lot of relief plans. So it's been difficult to, you know, get through relying on outside sources. So, you know, I know a lot of the vendors we work with, we've worked together in ways of, you know, getting through this thing. I'm definitely naive to say all of the vendors are going to survive this, and, you know, we're all going to be happy-go-lucky on the other side of it. So I could definitely forecast some change up on the vendor side.
How come you guys didn't go into live streaming your event?
Live streaming was always an option, something we've played with in earlier years, but was something that, you know, to us truly, or to me anyways, truly took away from what I thought festivals should be. And that is really that experience of being there. I'll, you know, die by this and say, you can't get that through your TV screen, your computer screen, or whatever screen you're watching it through. So, you know, the live stream, though it helps sponsors and viewership and everything else, I think it takes away from what a festival should really be. And that's coming together with maybe people you didn't think as of family before, but it's a big family when you're on that, those grounds.
No, it's true. I was watching a couple of Twitch EDM festivals that they had in Las Vegas. I forgot the name of it, but I was watching it the whole like weekend. I think it was 2 or 3 days, and I really liked it. But it was kind of awkward too, because you had the DJs were trying to hype up the audience, and they were like, hey, come on, you know, like throwing their hands up, like everybody get into the beat. And really, it's kind of like you're at home alone and you're staring right at this screen, and you look at chat and everybody's using like the flame emoji. And it's not the same. And I love that we were all trying to get into it, but it definitely was missing something.
Yeah, it's very, very difficult through that screen, right? And I'm glad you brought up the DJs themselves trying to do that. You know, a lot of really great talent and artists, they feed off of that energy that the crowd gives them. So when that's not there, I totally see where you're coming from. There's definitely something missing, or an awkward feeling between the two parties.
Absolutely. And you're right, because a lot of times the DJs will sit there and they tend to single out a couple of the people in the front, and you'll dance with them and they'll dance with you, or, you know, they'll hide and they'll play with you. And it's really intimate, right? But when you're, it's just a screen and a camera guy's looking at the DJ, it really feels more like a set than it does as an experience. And I can see why you guys want to really bring that out to people, because you need that for this to really work. But Ever After Music Festival, it looks great. I love seeing it. But do you really think that you guys are going to, like, people are going to want to come out to your festival after all this pandemic stuff?
You know what? That's a great question. And I battled with the question in my own head, you know, on both sides of the coin, or the answer per se. But I think that festival attendees, the true diehard fans that, you know, go every year, whether they go to the same festival or switch up the product offerings, I think they're at a point with this, as long as there's a safety, a conscious plan, whether that be via vaccine or, you know, better regulation on health and safety, I think they want the live entertainment, right? I've read many studies and many different e-blasts and stuff like that I'm signed up to that are telling us that, yeah, 87% of your fans want to come back. And the rest, they really just want to come back when they know that everything's really, really safe. So what does that mean? Is it a vaccine? Is it, like I said, higher regulation on health and safety? I'm not sure what that is. And I'm sure there's going to be a collaborative discussion between fan and audience and promoters that make everyone feel safe. But at the end of the day, I believe our industry is one of the most looked at in terms of regulation, both from health and safety, from bylaw, from police, from fire, from all aspects of, you know, what a city really runs on. Because at the end of the day, that's what you're building, a mini city for a weekend or, you know, a few days. So we get looked at very, very heavily. And I truly believe that, you know, the fans are going to come back.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the past events, and man, it was pretty lit. I wanted to go. I was pretty stoked. I was getting into it. And what's unique about EDM festivals is that it's not strange to wear a mask.
Exactly.
So you can go out and still wear one even after everything's said and done. But if for other people, would you want to help them feel safer by limiting the amount of attendees that are coming? Or is it, how would you work with that?
That's a unique outlook on it as well. There's two ways to look at this business, and it's either going really, really big and creating these, you know, monster festivals that do 30, 40, 50, 100,000 people, or it's breaking this industry down into, you know, really smaller regulated parties of, let's say, 10 to 15,000 people. So I think because we're independently run and we're independently owned and we can really dictate how we make our canvas, I think it's going to come down to just truly listening to the fans, listening to the audience, asking and really taking in what they want and what they feel comfortable with, and just curating from there. So, you know, we try and do that every year and take in fan feedback and really maneuver through those obstacles and what that could be. So I think it's going to come down to that, just listening and doing what they want.
Well, Gabriel, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm personally on Instagram as Gabriel Mattacchione. Ever After is obviously on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all of the platforms as Ever After Fest or Ever After Music Fest. We're pretty easy to find. You know, we hope you tune into our channel.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.